Welcome to Apple Pie Playground, where we serve up slices of healing for the heart. Stay tuned for a journey of transformation back to the divine inner child. Can you come out and play today?
Welcome, everybody, to Apple Pie Playground. I'm your host, Valerie. We are back on the playground this week, and it feels so good to be here and being with BBS Radio. Thank you so much, BBS, for the good work that you do. We are so grateful. And it is the holiday season in full swing now, and I am so glad you've taken a break from all the cares that holidays can bring to sit down a while with me. And I'm so glad that you're here. Many of us have experienced real change in our lives this year. For, you know, many of us, it's been something of a rough year. And plenty of opportunities to grow, and that's hardly ever easy. And feeling safe through change is something of a challenge, isn't it? And feeling loved is, it's always the hard part of change. And we don't tend to feel loved when we go through a great deal of change, do we? It's sort of our first hardest lesson in a painful moment, right? In a crisis or a traumatic event, isn't it? Not to feel loved or cared for enough, you know, to be shielded from difficult things. And it really forces us to do something quite radical. Even the shyest of us tend to evolve into a fairly radical kind of solution. And for many of us, you know, especially with soft hearts, it takes us a few times around, right? A few times to learn. We have to get to a point in the suffering where we choose something different than our normal go-tos for feeling better. And we have to get to a point where we choose ourselves. We have to get to that place where we say, you know, forget begging, praying, hoping, wishing, forget all of that. It's time for something else, right? Have you ever been there? I know I have. And we say, finally, it's time to do this radical thing of loving ourselves, friends, right? We have to set the bar, right? We have to set the tone. We have to set new intention and engage right action. And, you know, a lot of that is hard when it comes to change, but then we're up against a wall and we know, you know, we gotta turn around and start fighting back, right? We have to be willing to pick up the mirror, so to speak, and look at it and look until we see ourselves with compassion, so that the person who looks back at us is our most authentic self, you know, our most powerful self, our true self. And we have to take our power back, and we stand there up against the wall and we realize that that is our truth. We have to reclaim our divine birthright, so to speak. We have to demand our place as divine beings in an eternal storyline that starts right down here on the ground where our 2 feet are. And we have to start walking, you know, 1 foot at a time. And that actually really is today's message, friends. We'll probably take the long way around to get to it, but just a little, you know, intro there. But that's probably where our best message will be, by the time our time together is up. So I heard a message this week that was a fairly sobering description of how our energies create our realities. And it was a tried and true description of what we know as the orange analogy, right? And you probably have heard the orange analogy. It's been around for a bit. If you want to get a really, really good description or explanation of the orange analogy, it's the lemon analogy in this particular description. But find your way to TikTok, okay? TikTok, and find the channel Upspiral. Upspiral your life on TikTok, okay? You'll find a great treatment of the idea of the orange analogy. And he calls it the lemon analogy. It's just a wonderful explanation. It caught my attention. I wanted to bring it to your attention. And it really got me thinking and really put into motion a series of ideas that I really hope we can share together today. Now, the orange analogy is a simple idea, really. And the idea is that if we hold an orange and we squeeze all of the juice out of that orange, what we're going to get is orange juice, right? Nothing else. Nothing else is going to come out. But this little idea magnifies human life in fairly complicated ways when we start thinking about it, right? The idea is we are the energy we create within us, okay? We are on the inside, right? What the cosmos feels us being on the outside. All right? Energy to energy. We are the frequency and the motion and the direction and the resonance of energies that define us as energetic beings from the inside out. Okay? So therefore, what we project out is what we get back. As a matter of alignment. That is the orange analogy. That's the general idea. We engage an energetic cosmos on an energetic level, and this is a cosmos looking for alignment, right? And the idea is the cosmos networks with us based on what is being communicated by us. And it matches the manner of our energetic footprint, right? And communicates back in the same manner. And that is alignment. And wherever we are in our capacity to align is what we will put out and then what we will get back. So I want to translate just a little bit that what we're really doing, okay, is clearing all the blockages in our energy, right? When we talk about alignment and moving ourselves into an alignment, we're talking about clearing our energy flow internally, okay? Clearing the judgment, the self-loathing, maybe the anger, the fear, whatever the case may be. We're clearing out all the junk that keeps us from integrating with more light in our body. We are aligning with source energies, right? As we discover how to integrate those energies into our physical beingness, right? Into our bodies. And I hope that that makes sense. So we are clearing out the cobwebs, right? By doing our internal work. And we begin to align with source energies that fill us more and more in our efforts, right? And we're essentially increasing our capacity to fill ourselves with light energy, Okay, and we talk about this a lot. It's really our singular goal as physical bodies, as spirits wanting to maintain a physical body in a physical universe, is pulling light energy into this body and filling it up. And it is a priority for us, a divine priority, right? So let's navigate this idea a little bit, right? Because it gets us to a place eventually that I really want to share together today as we talk through how we might think a little differently about our true natures and the suffering that we might be feeling. And so when we think about this analogy of the orange, hermetically, so to speak, as a natural law, okay? As the idea that everything originates in the mind's eye, right? In the reasoning of doing what we do, things can get fairly unpleasant fairly quickly. And we can actually start feeling a little crazy, like crazy people, if we're not careful. Right. So let me give you an example of this when we start peeling back the layers of these ideas and working with words like manifestation, for example, which gives us all kinds of trouble when we really want to clarify, what our divine experience is. So do you remember the movie French Kiss? French Kiss, where Meg Ryan explains to Kevin Kline, right? He's the French guy in French Kiss. So she explains to Kevin Kline, his character, that she absolutely refused to be inauthentic. And she offers an explanation of that. She says, when she's happy, she smiles. And when she's sad, she frowns. Do you remember the line? She says, happy smile, sad frown. Use the corresponding face with the corresponding emotion. You remember that line? And it's what she considered being authentic and without pretense. And we're told that the most powerful energy in our body is the frequency of our authentic self, and we talk about that a lot. Being who we are as our core frequency, right? Your frequency, friends, is it's all you. It's all about you, right? The universe is not going to mistake your frequency for your neighbor's, for example. Souls are not like the post office, right? So a question might come up. How do we pull the two ideas together then, when they sort of feel like opposite arguments as we're thinking about how to live consciously, right? If faking it until we make it is the law of the universe, are we doomed, right? All of us who aren't, psychopaths or evildoers with no inner compass or that kind of thing. I mean, how do we think about this? And so a question might be, is this really a thing? I mean, is it an actual law, a universal law that we get back what we put out? If we try to be happy, but we're really sad, for example, what do we actually send out into the universe? And, are we sending fake happy out, or are we sending out an authentic sadness? I mean, or maybe we're doing something else altogether. It's not a friendly question sometimes, right? And what will we get back? And according to the law, are we getting back more sadness because that is more authentic, right? What are we getting back? So is using the corresponding face with the corresponding emotion a recommended way to live our authentic lives after all? right? Or are we sort of just manifesting icky stuff with all these super raw, super real emotions? I mean, manifestation language, we hear it everywhere, all over the place, all the time. It really gets complicated, and it really gets confusing. And I am wondering where it leads us, friends. Right? I mean, can we really even fake the feelings we have anyway? So, can we? Oh, and by the way, what is being authentic? Right? I mean, what does that really mean? Lot of folks say that being authentic means living by your truth, which means if you live a dark, mean-spirited life as a soul who is happy as pie, you're going to get more pie back from the cosmos, right? I mean, let's say that you're thrilled by the business schemes that you've got going, right? You're taking people's hard-earned money, you're making lots of cash, lots of money, right? Just as an example. And you put pure joy out into the universe, right? Over all these deals and these schemes, and you get back even bigger deals. Right? No matter accountability, no consideration for consequences, no, never mind morality, right? And you are in total alignment with your intentions, every dark one of them, right? You are in a groovy flow state. You have tons of inner peace. And by the way, a Bugatti LV in sports car, right? So, how do we think about this? Right? Is that what we're talking about? Is that why our world is actually so messed up? Because folks are happy as clams ruling the world, and the rest of us are passionately miserable trying to do the right thing, right? I mean, wow, that's a lot to think about. Because the one truth of our existence is that we get back what we put out, right? That's the question. Whatever our joy is or our misery, we're gonna manifest that. And the true self is supposed to be the self that is aligned with the unified field of consciousness, right? The true self does not create itself from illusion or lack or judgment, none of those things. But what it chooses to be as a set of intentions that make it so. Okay? And hopefully that will become meaningful as we talk today. Right? Not as something good or something evil, but as something fully authentic, something fully aware, fully animated by preferred intentions, right? A point of order here. Okay, if we can. There's really only one truth of things, friends. Okay, there's really only one truth of things. We all want to have our own truths, and of course we all have our own paths to the truth, and it is all unique as a journey for sure. But it all boils down to one truth, okay? We are children of the one creation, and that creation embodies the truth of itself, okay? Of its being. Does that make sense? What is the one truth? Well, it's to know itself, its authentic self, or to know itself authentically, right? Its conscious self. So, by this measure, right, is it something like to thine own self be true? I mean, that's the question. That's the question. Fun fact, In data analysis, there is such a thing as finding an SSOT. An SSOT, single source of truth in data management. It's the aggregating of data into a pattern of information, okay? And I think maybe if I had to describe the single source truth of the one creator energy, it might be something like the energetic work of patterning unified consciousness into a network of energetic calls and responses, communication, that produce patterns of communication, and when translated, construct our realities. And that's something of a mouthful, right? That's something of a mouthful. Let's use a different image. Let's use a completely different image where we are all flowers in the garden of a single gardener, and we grow as he sows, and it is us who feeds from the soil and opens to the sun and drinks in the rain. All these things we need for our growth. And the gardener walks through his garden and sees what he's planted and admires what he's grown. And does he decide what stays and what goes? How to weed the garden, how to trim it, how to manicure it into beautiful things? Does he decide what he wants more of and what he wishes to cut down? Right? Can we even know these answers right now? So the law we're talking about seems to limit the attentions of our gardener, doesn't it? Limit his reach and limit his control and limit his moral judgment. And it seems to put into our hands the duties of tending the garden that he created. Does that make sense? And so we might ask ourselves, do we really realize how much more co-creating we actually do than we might think? You know, as the law of the garden, as it were, we are co-creators with Source. With Source. And I heard a really beautiful comment this week, right? That the source of all things looks for itself and wants to know where it is and what it's doing across creation, sort of like a parent who keeps an eye on children playing on the playground, right? And on the playground, we behave the way our parents teach us to behave, right? And then, of course, we get on the playground and we pick up the rest from, you know, from the other kids around, right? And it becomes our universe. And really, there's really only one rule, right? Because we're all there playing together. And the one rule is what we do affects everybody else, right? So we can intend anything we want to when we're on the playground without judgment, but with the expectation that our choices will affect everybody else. And it becomes sort of easy to see, right, why we have a world in decay, doesn't it? I mean, if we follow that sort of playground analogy. For example, if we don't share the swing, right, it affects other people, other kids. If we take sand out of the sandbox, it affects others. And eventually it's going to affect us as well, right? And it's Not so different as adults, right? Can we get clearer about the things we set into motion as intentions? Right? Can we learn to reframe our present moments in a way that feels more like a flower growing in God's garden, right? Even when we struggle, even as a single mom struggling to feed her children, or a dad working a job that's killing him because he loves his family? I mean, can we love ourselves enough to imagine higher intentions? To imagine being a flower in an energetic garden with sunshine and good soil and rain, even when our physical life doesn't have any of that? Can we reach for the sun, friends, even while we struggle? And this is sort of where the idea of manifestation loses me. And I'm so sorry to say that, friends. I struggle so much to talk about things that I can't exactly buy into. We aren't sending energy out into the universe to get it back as a present or a reward or an expectation. That's choosing to function outside of ourselves. Right? To give our powers away, to send it out, to sort of outsource our powers, outsource our energies. No, we won't do that. Instead, we observe our intentions, right? What are their habits, their patterns? Are we operating with resilience or despair, for example? Are we determined or resigned? Do we see purpose and opportunity, or do we see fear? Are we victors or are we victims? I mean, the truth is the faking it until we make it part, that part really is what becomes honest for us, right? Faking it until we make it. And we feel the fear and we say, I prefer to focus on a solution rather than a problem. Right? I prefer to offer myself compassion, to look at the situation differently, to try again tomorrow another way. And to say, okay, I have to choose me. I have to choose the power of my energy to unify around my problem, right? I intend a creative alternative. I intend to breathe deeply when I can't do anything else. I intend to be quiet for a minute and sit here quietly, just sit quietly and let the worry go. I intend to leave the problem alone for a while and revisit it later. Right? And when we do these things, we're reshaping our intentions and we're clearing the energy that flows through us. Right? We are allowing a quiet alignment of our true selves and the unified field of consciousness all around us. Even while we're uncertain, right? Even if just for a moment, the true self can emerge in the stillness, in the breathing, in the quiet, and our energy can shift. Even if just for a moment, and we can build from there. Right? We can build from that. And the devastating, destructive narratives of humanity, right? Historical narratives from every age might actually explain why we are so very addicted to manifestation language. You know, how much of our authentic selves are buried in the mind control and the dogma and the mythologies of those who have dominated us. I mean, that we would believe that a perfect, sacred cosmos would offer us things not good for us and send us things we don't want and teach us to call it manifestation. I mean, how is that possible? It is certainly something to think about. So when we reach for what is authentic and we pull out, you know, being fearful, or we pull out feeling depressed, or we pull out this life experience of autism, or we pull out being traumatized by an abusive spouse, we can see how the orange analogy is not a very happy one. And on the inside, we have been pillaged. We've been plundered as spirits, right? And the authentic self is something of an anathema for us, isn't it? And by all accounts of manifestation language, there is a decadent, self-obsessed darkness that is wholly authentic and determined to overwhelm our light. And its clarity and self-absorption allows it no regrets. It is perfectly aligned with its deeds. And so, what then, friends? And even if this image is a model of our minds and the battle between what occurs in our minds, right? How do we address it? How do we consider the perfect manifestation of something so dark as we struggle morally and desperately at our kitchen tables? And I suppose our defense is a good offense, right? We determine to take action. Faith without action is dead. Right? Intentions without action are useless. And by the way, Christ never talked about manifestation because he didn't subscribe to it. Right? It's everything that purports to be external to the Spirit's own internal work. Right? I'm just getting that out of the way just right now. Just going to get that out of the way. Action clears energy. Action moves intentions forward. Action is its own manifestation, right? Energy flow is motion. Breathing is motion. So how do we think about all of this? Right? How do we think about all of this? How do we breathe into a calm around a difficult situation? And get the heart to bring us to a place of peace in really tough times. Right? How do we do that? How do we call on our true natures so we can show up authentically, even in times of trouble? Right? How do we pretend to be happy when we're not? Or fulfilled when we aren't? Or safe when we're in so much emotional danger, right? How do we grow as flowers in another's garden? I mean, you know, it's something of a pickle, right? It's something of a pickle. And so I mentioned hermetics a minute ago, and it's a set of natural laws that attempts to describe what influences human self-mastery, right, and internal harmony and conscious co-creation of reality, okay? It's a set of natural laws. It's a hermetics that attempts to describe this human experience of transcendence, right? And they're laws that guide us into transcending the physical self, actually, and remembering our divinity, right? As above, so below. As within, so without. For example, right? It's a hermetic law. And if you'll recall, it's something of a law that guided Christ's teachings, right? In the Gospel of Thomas, he lays it all out. Knowing ourselves is knowing God. What is true on the inside is true on the outside, right? What is true for the heart will be our truth for the universe. And the law, you know, there's another thing called the law of polarity, right? It's another hermetic teaching. And it says that everything has an opposite, right? Everything has an opposite. We are a full cosmos of everythingness, right? We are fully everything and all things, right? We can be authentic selves, both when we are sad, right? The same as when we are happy. Okay, the law of polarity points this out. We can be authentic even in our sadness, friends, right? And any idea of manifestation that tells us that we can't experience opposite forces and still be authentic, right? Can that really be a version of ourselves that aligns energetically? Right? It's an idea we might want to ponder. Right? It might be all in how we show up, really. Are we able to stay true to our core selves through the hard times? Right? Can we keep our energies flowing through the body and our hearts open through the struggle? Right? Are we breathing? Right? Are we breathing through the hardships? Are we aligned with our spirits? Are we calling our spirit in? Are we remembering through the struggles to do these things? Right? And yes, our suffering can create more suffering. We see it all the time, right? What we energize, we create. What we put energy into creates, right? What we energize creates. Contrary to popular belief, we don't have to be conscious, right? Like open-eyed and aware in order to put energy into creating something. We can do it quite unconsciously. Right? We can create suffering by suffering. We can create hatred by hating. We can create love by loving. Right? So how do we take control over what we are projecting into our reality? Right? By our intentional efforts. How do we do it? How do we take the good, the bad, and the ugly and create better outcomes, right? And so the one thing conscious awareness does is offer velocity, okay? Energy with direction, all right? Velocity, energy in the direction we prefer, okay? Conscious awareness, it offers us velocity, right? Velocity that strengthens our frequencies and pulls us together and allows the physical realm of quantum mechanics to resonate a reality, right? Harmonizing with the forces of the cosmos, right? Even if it's a cosmos of the mind, okay? Tethering to the celestial, right? And so never mind arguments that the physical universe doesn't exist, okay? We're going to leave that for another day. It's okay. It's all right. We're going to leave that for another day. Our intentions make it exist as far, you know, as this conversation goes. We are as real as we can dream we are, right? For most of us, right? Life is too real, as a matter of fact. So never mind that it doesn't have form, et cetera, et cetera. Would we prefer that any better than what we have now anyway, right? Probably not. So, in this velocity of conscious intentions, right? Intentions are authentically expressed. They have direction. They are intentional. They're determined, right? They're going somewhere purposefully in the energetic field, right? We are talking about an intention that is a creation process in the energetic field that reinforces it, right? We are directing what we prefer into being. Now, the dark can do this as easily as the light, by the way, right? So what do we prefer? I mean, that's the question at any given moment. What do we prefer? And here's the thing. There are no secrets in the realm of energetics, friends. We can't hide our flow or what blocks it, right? Do we prefer the things we speak aloud into the world, right? Do we prefer the words we use? Do we prefer the actions we take, the habits we have, the routines we rely on, the crutches we lean on? Right? The mental patterns we keep thinking. These things translate as real to the energy field because it is you expressing you. Right? So here's the hard question. Can we tolerate haphazard living that doesn't have the bandwidth to activate our intentions toward what we prefer in our lives? I mean, will we tolerate being acted upon by the energies of others rather than setting into motion the velocity of our intentions so that a harmonious universe will parallel our energy's good work? Right? Our efforts, for many of us, we're trying to manage unhappy experiences and, you know, struggle and life stressors, pain of many kinds, and stepping out of that view may feel actually like being fake, like being inauthentic, like we're faking our feelings, maybe, right? Like we're being inauthentic. And, you know, we want God to love us and judge us kindly, don't we? Right? But what if Source doesn't love us that way? What if Source doesn't judge us that way? What if God loves us the way we show God we want to be loved? What if the Father of all things wants the most extraordinary experiences for his children of light, giving us more and more of what we seem to want by our intentions? Is that possible? And it's hard to talk about releasing our suffering when it doesn't put food on our table. And I know, I know, friends. I get it. And it doesn't bring a loved one back. And I understand that more than you know. And so the question is, can we create a little velocity in our intentions to move us toward a better experience of this life, a better experience in our struggle? Right? Even just a little. And I think we can. I think we must, you know. And we can use a few really powerful tools to help us do that. And I'm wondering if, you know, you want to think about that a little bit with me. What are these tools that we might use? So maybe the next time that we're sitting at our kitchen table and we're worrying or we're grieving or we're overwhelmed and we're looking out the window at a gray day, maybe, I wonder if we can take a moment to do something a little different. I'm wondering if we can take a moment to look out and intend a new thing. Are we willing to risk commanding a new feeling? I think when we think about it, we'll realize that so many of us don't engage our spirits very much as humans. Maybe it's part of the problem. We see our spirit as something foreign to us, something we have to go to church to find. And we don't really claim ourselves and integrate ourselves as spirits. We look to beings like Christ as the only holders of sacred spirit when things couldn't be farther from the truth, friends. We are first and foremost the spirit of us, the soul of us. Commanding our spirit is claiming our energies and unifying our celestial with our physical. So the next time we're feeling vulnerable or sad or worried, maybe we can choose to call on our spirits as part of us. And I'm wondering if we're willing to take the chance of commanding our spirits to be at work in our bodies, to be present with us, and to help us form a positive intention of feeling peace. I'm wondering if we're willing to say, "My spirit, be present within me and help me feel peace." I wonder if we can do that. I wonder if we could say, "Fill me with light, my spirit, so that my heart can form brighter intentions." Can we decide to claim a relationship with our very own spirit as a living part of us? I mean, the true self, the part that confers with our cosmos and knows God intimately. Can we ask our spirit to be with us and help us and guide us into the intentions we daydream about in our hearts? We can do that. We can spend a lot of time trying to find God outside ourselves, friend. Friends, when the truth is, source energy finds us when we do the inner work. Source reclaims us from within. Are we remembering that in all we do, we can do inviting our spirits to be with us? We can do inviting our spirits to be with us. The spirit knows what we don't as egos and can guide us powerfully, okay? But we look outside ourselves and we look for cures and practices and prayers. And really, the surest way to communion with God is through our spirits connected directly to us. And maybe the next time we're sitting at our tables and looking out and we're stressed or we're worried or we're sad, I wonder if we can remember to breathe in a little bit and breathe out as consciously as we can and make those breaths deep and full and purposeful and allow our breathing to generate the heart's healing flow of energy within us. And I wonder while we're sitting there and we're inviting our spirit in and we are breathing deeply. If we can spend just a minute longer mustering a minute or two of gratitude for anything, for something beautiful, thanking spirit for being with you and being grateful for those specific things that you know you are so very glad to have or to be or to understand or to feel. We call in our spirits. We breathe. We offer a minute of gratitude. And friends, we align our energy flow. And we create conscious awareness of our beingness sitting right there at the table. And so maybe that's something to think about. They are powerful tools if we choose to use them. You know, we talked in the beginning of our time together about a few views on the way our energy works. And we asked a lot of questions, the answers of which will be up to each one of us to decide for sure. One thing that we do know is this year might have been fairly hard for many of us. And many of us might have grown up with hard years, year after year, and we think we'll get used to it, and then things get harder, and we might want to give up or give in to what's hard, and we may want to be resigned to it being a way of life. It's been such a long time after all. But I want to ask you, friends, please, please resist. Stay in the fight. Dream of freedom. Put your intentions to work, followed by action. Talk to your spirit, friends. Talk to your spirit. Get help from your spirit. Invite your spirit in. Invite your spirit to pull in the energy of Source into every cell of your body. Don't be afraid to have that conversation as often as you can. And the truth is, friends, you know, we are breaking free. The world is a chaotic place, but in that chaos is evolution, and we are evolving into what one day we can call an age of Aquarius. And we can make so many beautiful changes in the expression of who we are as a humanity in this physical reality if we choose to. And it starts with our intentions, followed by action, and calling on our spirit and breathing and showing gratitude. And all of this adds up, and pretty soon we have one foot in front of the other into something new and beautiful. And you know, we're humans, at least in this life, and we don't choose to do things just because they're easy, and we never have. We are creators, after all. And we excel at devising genius out of nothing but our sweat equity and our imaginations. And we don't do things because they're easy. We do them because they're hard. We do the hard things because it aligns us with our divinity. It positions us for remembrance. We are spark and we are light. We are indomitable. And we're not afraid. And we do the hard things. So maybe let's end with a Dixit card this week. A Dixit card is a card that illustrates a scene, and it's meant to awaken the subconscious mind and give us a little peek at what's stored there in the suitcases in our minds. And sometimes we like to do a Dixit card just to take a peek and see what's going on. And all we need is something to write with and something to write on, or some of us like to use a notebook. So anything to write with, anything to write on, and we will start with a Dixit card. So here's this week's Dixit card scene, okay? Imagine this scene, and then we'll do some self-reflection. Okay, here's the scene. All right, and your job is just to imagine the scene in your mind and let it unfold any way that it chooses, and then observe. Okay, observe what unfolds. You are inside a snow globe. You are standing inside a snow globe. And you are in front of a backdrop that you know very well inside a snow globe. Okay? You are in a scene that represents the holidays. Okay? Are you getting the scene in your mind? Right? You are inside a snow globe. You are standing against a backdrop that you know well. And you are in a scene that represents the holidays. Okay? Let's ask some questions and do a little reflection. Question number one, where are you? Describe your scene. Where are you? Number two, are you glad that you're there in the scene there in your inside the snow globe? Are you glad you're there? Number three, when someone shakes the snow globe, what kind of sparkles fly around in your snow globe? Describe the sparkles that fly around. When someone shakes the snow globe, what kind of sparkles fly around in your snow globe? And number four, where is your snow globe sitting? What is its location? Where is your snow globe sitting? What is its location? Right? That's an interesting one. You're sitting somewhere on somebody's counter. Where are you? And number five, who owns the snow globe you're in? Who owns the snow globe you're in? And number six, what would you change about the setting inside your snow globe? What would you change about where you are? And the last question, do you wish you could get out of the snow globe? Do you wish that you could get out? Just a few things to think about as we allow a scene to unfold in our minds, and it might be worth taking a little bit of time to think about some of the questions we asked today and see if there's any kind of subconscious ideas that might be floating around for you and might be meaningful about the holidays, or maybe a few things that you can take a look at and think about. And I hope we were okay asking more questions today than we actually got answers to. I think maybe it's okay to do that sometimes. And I'm so glad to have had your company today. I hope we're going away with a few tools that will help us feel better about being in touch with our spirits and doing the good work of putting our intentions forward in action and breathing deeply and being mindful about how to do that and showing a little bit of gratitude. But now, friends, it's time for me to go home. And maybe you'll take a minute or two this week and spend some time looking at yourself in the mirror. There's an awful lot of things to love there. And I hope that you're able to realize that about yourself. So I will be so excited to join you again next week. And thank you so, so much, BBS, for your wonderful support. And so, everyone, until next time.
Time to head home, friends. thanks for being a part of today's journey. We'll see you back on the playground next Sunday at 1 p.m. Central Time on bbsradio.com. Make sure to subscribe if you enjoyed the show. Find us on Telegram and X to share your insights on topics today. Your input heals the child in us all.